The following program may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
It's the Saturday Morning Cereal.
They're great!
What's your emergency?
I wish we had some Cap'n Crunch.
Death waited in the dark at the hands of a man they called the Night Stalker.
Always have to be Lucky Charms.
Yahoo! I'm cuckoo!
Theodore Robert Bundy. You are charged 2 counts burglary, 2 counts murder in the first degree, 3 counts attempted murder in the first degree.
I'll plead not guilty right now.
The refrigerator where Jeffrey Dahmer kept body parts.
They're magically delicious.
I am prepared to die if you say it is necessary.
Recognize me, David!
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Silly rabbit.
I think we have to start today's Saturday Morning Cereal with the review that we received on the show.
Oh, was that not the funniest thing?
Like, I feel like if we're going to open it up, we got to open it up with someone who just will tell you right away what to expect out of this show in case this is your first.
I mean, I couldn't agree more.
Saturday Morning Cereal.
Someone who really gets it.
Yeah.
So this came to us as a message from a Saturday Morning Cereal listener. Her Instagram handle is The Hulligans.
Okay.
So she sends it to us, and this is basically, she broke down, she provided an outline for how every Saturday Morning Cereal goes. So number one, it's the pre-story and the sources.
Uh-huh.
So right now we're in the pre-story.
Yep.
Number two is the start of the story, where I set the scene. And then number three, we mention Wet Sox. And number four leads us into a whole side story about Wet Sox.
Well, listen, Wet Sox are never fun to
have. It's never fun.
No.
Then we get back to the story. Mm. Then somewhere after we get back to the story, Monroe opens a Coke.
Well, because I forgot to open it before.
But we already mitigated that one right out of the gate. It's open. You're good to go?
Yeah, it's open. She's
okay,
open.
Good. Also, it's a Diet Pepsi, just so we're clear.
Uh-huh.
Also, Monroe, the people want to hear the and how dare you?
Yeah,
you
provided like
the people.
You've set the people up with high expectations.
Well, hey, listen. If that's what they're looking forward to.
Yeah. And then we all have an intervention about Monroe opening Cokes on air, which is fair.
Yep. Yeah.
And then I ask myself, wait, where was I? Number 9. Oh, yeah, that's right. Ha, 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 murder, murder, murder. And then number 10, the conclusion. So
there it is.
Thank you so much. Uh-huh. I mean, I think we could just call it a day on this episode.
Well, it's the show outline just prepped for us.
I know.
You don't even have to listen now.
Now it's just a plug and play. Now I'm just like name, date, murder,
done.
Conclusion.
I want to let you know that after last week's Saturday Morning Cereal, I actually was at Costco and I had myself a hot dog.
Yeah.
And then I threw the napkin in the trash. And I was like, no, this is how the detectives will get you.
Well, what are you trying to hide, John?
Uh-huh. Right. Then I went to myself, why are you freaking out?
Yeah, like, just throw the hot dog away. It's
okay.
Fine. No one's after you, as far as we know. Is someone after you?
Maybe.
Okay.
Find out.
It's because you were peeing on cars again, isn't it? Again.
I told you that.
We talked about it.
I told you that in confidence.
Nothing's a secret on this show. All right. Well, American Horror Story premiered last... Was it last Wednesday? I don't know.
Okay.
It all runs together. But this season is like a classic slasher film. So everyone's at sleepaway camp, and it's like slasher, slasher, slasher.
Oh, we're talking like an old Friday the 13th
style. Yeah, like classic 80s horror kind of thing. So I was wondering, I wanted like that classic horror element where it could actually be a movie. And then I found this case on Wikipedia.
Oh, no. You are going to ruin John.
I know.
All weekend, he's going to be like, you guys, I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
This is what I do. I text the two of them all the time when you guys ruin me with your
stories.
Well,
now I'm worried about kids and stuff. So this isn't going to be a Cabin in the Woods slasher type thing.
Okay.
But it is a classic kind of horror storyline. We'll get in there. Do you know where Texarkana is?
I do.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on the border of Texas and Arkansas. Texarkana. So.
Oh, I love that. It's like Calneva.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or like Wendover, how it's a border town where half of Wendover's in Utah, half of Wendover's in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same exact
Utava.
Thing. Well, no, it's called Wendover for sure.
Utah, Nevada.
Utada. There it is. Utah, Nevada.
Get Wendover on the phone. We have to talk about some things. But yeah, so it's a small border town right on the border of Texas and Arkansas. It's the last town you would expect anything bad to happen. Mm-hmm. Classic story. Everyone leaves their doors
unlocked. It's a small town.
Yeah, nope. It currently has a population of 37,000. So back in 1946, I couldn't find the population, but wow. I'm assuming it was much lower than 37,000. The story takes place February 22nd, 1946. 25-year-old Jimmy Hollis took his 19-year-old girlfriend, Mary Jean Larry, to a movie. And afterward...
No, they didn't.
They went to a movie scandal. I know. But I mean, at this point, he's 25. Like, get married. It's 1946. What are you waiting for?
Yeah.
So he takes his girlfriend to a movie, and then they park on a lover's lane.
Oh my gosh, like they did in the old movies.
Just like back in the day.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You guys, you are like romanticizing lover's lanes. Yeah. They are murder alleys.
Nothing.
Everyone gets murdered.
Good ever happens at a love alley.
We have a love alley by our house.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Is that a real thing that still happens?
Call my hallway. Hey, I'm John.
Gross.
No.
Gross.
No, seriously, we actually do have a lot.
No, hold on.
Is there like a secluded roadway where
there's
kids...
There is actually a lookout right by our house, and there are cars there every night.
Yeah, hanky-panky.
Oh, yeah.
That's what's going on.
It is still going down
is
in the
it?
Year of our Lord, 2019.
That's nice.
Yeah, just so you know.
But that's still happening.
Yeah. I'm going to follow my kids. Wherever they go.
Just know that there's going to be a multiple murder that happens over there.
Mm-hmm.
When those kids that
happens.
Hanky-panky-ing, it's going to be a murder.
Because
that's exactly what happened. So they parked on a secluded road known as a lover's lane. And around 10 minutes later at 11:55, a man wearing a cloth mask. So they call it a cloth mask, but really it's just like a pillowcase with eye holes cut in it.
Oh, that's
no.
creepy.
Shows up to the driver's side door, and they shine a flashlight down into the car. Now, Jimmy just thinks this is one of his buddies showing up to the car and pranking him.
Yeah,
so he doesn't take it very seriously. So he's like, bro, you got the wrong car. Get out of here. Because they were getting ready.
Yeah.
And the man responded, I don't want to kill you, dude, so do what I say. Scary.
Whoa. Mm.
So the man orders Jimmy to take off his gosh darn britches.
Mm.
So he gets him out of the car, takes off his pants.
I'm sorry, quick question. He has the flashlight.
Uh-huh.
Does he have another weapon? I mean, Jimmy's following these directions.
We'll get there.
Okay.
He threatened to kill him. You do what he says.
Yeah. But you know what? Nothing good has ever happened on a lover's lane when they say, hey,
do what I say.
Take off your britches. Just choose death. Choose to die.
Oh, well, and Monroe's the type, too, that someone has a flashlight in her face, says, take off your britches. And she's just like, what are you going to do? Do it, big boy.
Exactly.
So stop laughing. It's not funny right now.
I'm sorry.
So Jimmy takes off his pants. And then gets hit twice in the head with a pistol. So the guy has a gun.
Oh, he does have a gun. Okay.
He has a gun. And Mary later tells investigators that the noise was so loud from him getting hit in the head that she thought he had shot him. That wasn't a gunshot, my friend. That was Jimmy's skull fracturing.
Oh, my God.
He hit him so hard it fractured his skull in multiple places, and it sounded like a gunshot.
Hmm.
So doesn't sound so great for Jimmy. Mary thought that they were getting robbed. So she's like, this isn't just like a random act of violence. Like, obviously this guy wants something.
Yeah.
So she pulls Jimmy's wallet out of his pocket and opens it up. And she's like, we don't have any money. I don't know what you want from us. So she shows him the wallet and he hits her with a blunt object and then tells her to stand up and start running. So she gets hit to the ground.
What?
Tells her to get back up and run away.
Oh, I would be so mad. Are you serious? You just hit me in the head, dude. Now you want me to run?
Well, she's
I'd run.
Yeah, you gotta run.
I would run.
The first opportunity you get, you run and you don't look back. You don't stop until there is another person.
Doesn't make it okay.
So Mary ran toward a parked car, thinking there was gonna be like another set of hoodlums hooking up in there. She knocks on the window. It's empty. The guy in the pillowcase caught up to her. So this is where the part where it starts to get like real horror movie like.
Okay.
Where he tells you, now run. And then you stop, he's going to get you.
Yep.
No,
they
always trip when they're running from him in the woods. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, oh, great.
Well, But in the horror movies, they're never allowed to be faster than the person trying to get away. So if you trip, just get back up and keep running.
Keep running.
You don't have any. Yeah. You just keep running until the sun is up.
Mm-hmm.
So the car is empty, and he catches up to her, and he starts to sexually assault her.
Oh.
It wasn't great, and asked her why she was running away, and she said that he told her to, and he told her that she is a liar and continued sexually assaulting her.
Oh.
So that happens. Meanwhile, Jimmy, somehow with a broken cranium, wakes up. He gets up and flags down a passing car. The car left him there and drove to a funeral home to call the police, who arrived 30 minutes later. So he's just like, you just wait here. I'm going to get the cops involved for you. And by the time they arrived, Mary had managed to escape. So she got away from the attacker. She tries to flag down a car. They drive past and ignore her because it's the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Like, people always want to talk badly about those people who don't stop and help.
I don't think I would either.
Yeah. Man. I know, I'm sorry, but
Monroe's told the story.
I don't want to die.
Yeah.
You've told the story of your mom who had someone knocking on the door.
Yeah.
Who was like, help me, I was beat up. And your mom was like, I'll call the cops, but I'm not opening my front door. I don't blame her. It sounds terrible,
like,
though.
They're coming back for me, please. Help me.
Well, they're coming back for us now, girl. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, obviously now it's a lot easier for us because we can just call the police and be like, hey, I saw this. You should probably go check it out. But
yeah.
Back in the 40s, you just
different time.
Keep on driving. Mm-hmm. So the car drives past, but she does manage to make it to a house nearby, wakes up the couple who also calls the police.
Okay.
So now the police are on scene, and they take the couple in to the hospital. Mary was hospitalized overnight for minor head injuries. Jimmy was hospitalized for several days. He had multiple skull fractures. When they got interviewed by the cops, they provided conflicting descriptions of who did this. Now, keep in mind, he's basically covered, got gloves on, got the whole, even a pillowcase over his head, so it's hard to see.
Yeah.
Jimmy says that he's probably a 30-ish-year-old man, white, 6 feet tall. Mary says about the same thing, except that he was black. So now we have no idea who to look for.
Okay.
Because one party's saying white, one party's saying white, black. But she did admit saying, well, it was dark and his face was covered. And I guess he could have been white, but there were shadows.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I saw a black man. So do with that what you will. That's all they had on him. And with it being just an attack, the police look for as long as they can, but nothing else turns up.
Yeah, what are you really supposed to do? Yeah.
The next attack, however, comes about a month later. A motorist is driving along a different lover's lane. Lots of lover's lanes in Texarkana.
Okay.
Getting busy, Texarkana.
Not much to do there.
No. So a motorist is driving along the road and noticed a car parked off to the side. They got out to investigate, see if everything was okay. Two people inside. And after getting closer to the vehicle, the motorist realizes that they had been murdered.
Oh.
So this time it's really bad. 17-year-old Polly Ann Moore and her 29-year-old boyfriend, Richard Griffith. 17 and 29.
There was a lot of that. Well, it was 25 and 19, and yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but 17 and 29
was the 40s.
I get it. It was a different time. Okay, but imagine I'm showing up to a work party. I'm almost 29.
Yeah.
So this will work. Uh-huh. I show up to a work party, 17-year-old on my arm.
Yeah, it would be weird.
Somebody's calling the cops, right?
Highly inappropriate.
Everyone's going to look around like, oh.
You guys going to call it? Should someone do something about this?
We should call Child Protective Services.
Yeah.
Because Jackson showed up with a literal child.
Yeah.
But again, it's the 40s, different time. Still weird no matter what. So they've gone to see a movie and presumably parked at the Lover's Lane after. Apparently that was just the move to do in Texarkana back in the day. Richard had been shot twice. Once in the back of the head and was found on his knees wedged like between the two seats. His hands were crossed and his head was resting on his hands. So he was like in a really weird position.
Huh.
Polly was found sprawled out in the back seat. A large pool of blood was found outside the vehicle, which suggested that they had been shot outside the car and then placed in those positions inside the car.
Okay.
Presumably by the killer, but at this point, they don't even know if they're working with a one-off killer or if this is related to the first attacks that happened a month ago. There's a lot of questions. But the murders send the whole city into a panic. They're just like, okay, like it was bad enough when that couple got beat up, but now, like it's.
Well, yeah, you kill four people from a small town and.
Well, the first two survived.
Oh, so. That's right. Well, you attack four people from a small town and pretty much everybody knows somebody that's been attacked at that point.
Well, and that's kind of where they're at with it now. Uh-huh. Now the whole city's in a panic. Police launched a citywide investigation along with the Texas and Arkansas City Police. So police from both sides of the city are involved. Department of Public Safety, Miller and Cass County Sheriff's Departments, and they even got the FBI involved.
Wow.
So it was a quick response. They interviewed 50 witnesses at a bar near where the murders happened, but came up with nothing. So they assumed that they stopped by the bar after the movies and then ended up at the Lover's Lane. Okay. It's kind of the idea. They offered a $500 reward, which doesn't sound like much now, but back in the day, in today's money, that would be worth about $6,500.
That's a good amount of money.
It's a good chunk of cash, yeah. Once they offered the reward, then the tips start pouring in, and they follow up on about 100 tips, but they end up being false leads. So, again, they're sitting here with two people, this time murdered, attacked in the middle of the night on a Lover's Lane, and they're like, well...
Yeah.
There's nothing to go on. Like, there's not really a whole lot of forensic evidence. And in the 40s, forensics hadn't really been established as a credible sort, a credible science yet.
Right.
So, what were they really supposed to do? They took, like, fingerprints and blood samples, but there was no such thing as, like, DNA testing yet.
Okay.
So the whole city goes into a panic. At dusk, city inhabitants heavily armed themselves and locked themselves indoors while police patrolled the streets and neighborhoods. So everyone's freaking out. It's like a little military town.
Yeah.
Most businesses lost customers as soon as it started to get dark outside, but stores did completely sell out of guns, ammunition, lock, and other protective devices. Everyone's clearing out the Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
No,
it's what you do when there's a serial killer on the loose.
This I'm on board with. But like every now and then there's like, oh, a tropical storm. Uh-huh. It's like a category 19 tropical storm. You mean rain? Other like, or like when it snows in Texas and they sell out of like toilet paper and all these essentials. I'm like, there's a little bit of ice on the road. Grow
we'll
up.
We'll be okay.
Everything's going to be fine.
This is a murderer.
Yeah, exactly. So this one I understand. When everyone's crybabying about a thunderstorm.
So funny.
Get a grip. Several rumors began to spread, including that the killer had been caught or that a third or fourth double homicide had been committed. So at this point now, it's small town.
Yeah.
As they say on Letterkenny, bad gas travels fast in a small town.
Wow. I don't think I've ever heard that. Yeah. Ever.
Well, that's why I quoted my source.
Thank you.
Letterkenny.
Okay.
Really great show. Would recommend. So there are all these crazy rumors. Everyone's held up in their houses. They took matters into their own hands, some of the kids do. So what they start doing... By the way, this killer is now referred to as the Phantom Killer. Because he wears that... If it's the same guy as the first attack, he's wearing that pillowcase over his head. So some of the kids in the area nearby decide that they're going to take care of this themselves. They pile into a car, they sit on Lover's Lanes with guns, and they're going to murder the murderer themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Wilden. Don't let your kids chase murderers. I'm sure I don't have to say that, but that's a bad idea. All this panic, however, did nothing to stop the man who had now become known as the Phantom Killer. By April 15th, so the attacks are happening about a month apart, it looks like. By April 15th, 15-year-old Betty Jo Baker was playing saxophone at her regular VFW gig with her band. So, little 15-year-old. She's got her saxophone. She's out there playing for the Veterans of Foreign Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Good for her. At around 1:30 in the morning, her 16-year-old friend, Paul Martin, picked her up and is taking her home. So about 5 hours later, Paul's body, is discovered laying on the side of the road. He had been shot four times, once through the nose, again through the left fourth rib, and a third time in the right hand, then finally in the back of the neck. So he put up a fight. He wasn't going willingly.
Are they thinking then he pulled over as they were pulling over to
They eventually find the car later.
Okay.
But now the MO is kind of changing because the plan is usually kill him outside the car, put him back in the car. At least that's what we can assume was the plan the first time around, and that's what actually happened the second time around.
Hmm.
So he is found. He's got shot four times, the final one being in the back of the head, so that's another killer MO. Mm-hmm. And the weapon used was the same as in the first double murder. It's a .32 automatic Colt pistol. So they only see his body, though. They can't find Betty Jo anywhere. They look. It takes them about 5 more hours to locate her. She was 2 miles away from him and hidden behind a tree. Wow. She was fully clothed, right hand in her pocket, and her overcoat was buttoned up. So it doesn't look like she was undressed at any point. So it's weird. This is another thing where it's weird that there was evidence of a sexual assault in the first one, but there's no evidence of a sexual assault in the second or third one.
Oh, I guess I assumed in the second one there was sexual assault with her being sprawled in the back seat.
There were rumors that it had happened, but like there are more modern reports disclaiming that.
Really?
So they don't think that she had been sexually assaulted in the second murder either. Or, I'm sorry, in the first murder, second attack.
Got it.
So at this point, by the way, I don't want to say this part. Yeah.
No.
So she had been shot twice, once through the chest, once right in the face. And it was the same weapon that had been used in the first murder and on her friend Paul. Her saxophone wasn't found until 6 months later, but it was found in the overbrush near her body, still in its case. So sad. So at this point now, they are throwing all sorts of money. Like, this third murder, or this third attack, has completely gassed the fire. A reward fund exceeding $1,700, worth approximately, can you guess?
$9 billion.
$9 billion, Monroe.
Let's see, about time and a half, so how much?
Huh?
How much is this, 1,600?
1,700.
1,700, so let's see.
Time and a half
two,
is
four,
how she's doing this.
I would say, approximately be about 40.
$23,000.
Okay, I was way off.
$23,000. I love how you're trying to time and a half. That was an interesting choice.
Okay.
So they had gathered up about $1,700 to any lead leading to the persons responsible in the Griffin Moore and the Martin Booker murders. Rumors circulated through the area, with one rumor suggesting that a local minister had turned his own son in as a suspect in the murders. So,
whoa.
Apparently, and this is a town rumor, but the local minister was like, "Hey, I could use some
money,
cash.
Oh.
Pretty sure
Dad.
My son's a murderer. I would give John up for the cash
for $1,700.
Well, for $23,000, yeah."
Listen, that's life-changing money. Yeah. That's down payment on a house, man.
Yeah, that's good money.
Yeah, that's really good
money. Can't fault you.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't turn my dog in for that kind of money. But I would turn John in for that kind of money. Especially if I thought, well, maybe he is. Even if he's not guilty of these murders, he's guilty of something.
And you know me, I'll just admit to it because I want them to like me.
I know you will. And it'll be easy, too.
It'll be so easy.
On April 18th, Captain Gonzalez issued a statement to the public during a press conference verifying that the murderer had not been caught, and that the rumors circulating among the public and in the newspaper are a hindrance to the investigation and harmful to innocent persons. So, we're still looking for a murderer, folks. No clear leads anywhere. On May 3rd, the killer struck again. This attack was so well written on Wikipedia that I'm just going to read it word for word because I tried to rephrase it.
Yeah.
And I can't do better. So this is none of my words. This is 100% Wikipedia. Sometime before 9 p.m., Virgil Starks, age 37, a farmer and welder, was in his modest ranch-style house. He turned on his favorite weekly radio show, and his wife, Katie, age 36, gave him a heating pad for his sore back.
Aww.
So it was just a nice night in.
Yeah.
A couple farmers. Katie was in her bedroom, lying on the bed in her nightgown. She heard something from the backyard and asked Virgil to turn the radio down. So he turns the radio down. She's like, is that... Because, I mean, it could have been anything.
Be a coyote.
Raccoons! Mm-hmm. Raccoons in the trash again! Trash raccoons! So the radio turns down, and she hears what she thinks is a window breaking.
Oh.
It was indeed a window breaking, but it's because it had been shot through. So, Virgil was shot, it looks like, let's see, this is why I read it verbatim instead of trying to paraphrase. So, seconds after the radio had been turned down, two shots were fired into the back of his head through a closed double window.
Wow.
So he was getting up to go outside, and shots fired from outside.
Well, I think he just had turned it down. because I don't know that he was going to investigate. Oh, okay. She just wanted to see if she actually heard anything. And then he gets shot twice in the head through the window. So she gets up because she hears the sound of broken glass after the radio gets turned down. And because she thought that actually Virgil had dropped something. She still doesn't know anything's up. She got to the doorway to the living room, saw Virgil stand up, and then suddenly slump back down into his chair. Mm. She saw the blood and ran to him, lifted his head up, and when she realized he was dead, she ran to the phone to call the cops. So he is dead immediately. So she runs across the room, rang the wall crank phone 2 times before she was shot in the face from the same window.
Whoa!
So the killer, so
just
she's
standing there.
She's in such a panic, she just sees that her husband needs help. She gets up to use the phone. The killer is watching all this happen through the window.
Oh, no! Yeah.
So one bullet enters her right cheek and exits her left ear. The next bullet went just below her lip, breaking her jaw and splintering out several teeth before lodging under her tongue. So she's got a bullet stuck in her mouth. She dropped to her knees, but soon managed to get back on her feet. She ran to get a pistol from the living room, but was blinded by her own blood.
So she's shot twice in the face, and she's still running to get a gun.
Good for her. Man. Country gals, man.
Right? I was just thinking the
country
same
life.
Thing.
Dude. You're not playing around.
There's a farmer woman right there.
She heard the killer tearing loose the rusted screen wire on the back porch. She thought she was going to be killed, so she stumbled toward her bedroom near the front of the house, leaving to leave a note. So she's like, I'm just going to real quick let them know what happened, write it down before anything happens. So the killer, while she's writing the note, ran to the back of the house and made his way up the steps into the side screen porch through the back screen door. I don't know how this house is laid out. So
sure.
He runs to the side door. That's the long and short of it. She heard the killer coming through the kitchen window, so she turned around and ran through the dining room, through the bedroom, down a hallway, through another bedroom, and then into the living room, out the front door. So, like, she basically just darts around, tries to find any exit she can before going right out the front door, leaving a virtual, quote, river of blood and teeth through the house and across the street.
Dude.
That's so sad. That poor woman.
It's awful. So she, at this point now, is barefoot, still in her nightgown from laying down in bed. She ran across the street to her sister's house. Her sister and her brother-in-law live across the street. Okay. Knocks on the door. No one's home. So she ran another 50 yards. River of blood and teeth running behind her. Knocks on that door. This guy answers, and she says, Virgil's dead, and then she collapsed. So the man, whose name is Prater, shot a rifle into the air.
Yeah, there you go.
Warning to summon shot. Another neighbor named, his name is Elmer Taylor. So that's what kind of community we're living in.
Yeah.
You need to get Elmer's attention. You don't go knock on his door. Mm-hmm. Just shoot your gun. Bam.
I like these two.
It's like in Lord of the Rings when they light the fire and then it goes the next time. They light the fire and they're all communicating. They're all fire and pistols. Pew, 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 pew.
Yeah, so Elmer comes out. Pew, pew, pew. Prater tells Taylor to bring his car around because Mr. and Mrs. Starks have been shot. Taylor drove Mrs. Starks to the hospital, and this is very sweet, but really gross. In return for his kind gesture of driving her to the hospital, she gave him one of her teeth with a gold filling in it.
Aww.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why would you take that? No, well, it's okay. Really?
If someone shot in the face was giving you something, you're going to take it.
You take it.
You don't ask any questions.
You don't do the old no, then take it.
No, please. You keep it. You
I'm
can use it more than
to
I.
Know if this is one of those things that, like, back in the day, like, you know how you kept a lock of hair?
We talk about the hair a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you keep teeth?
I do.
Well, I know she was doing it because it had gold in the filling.
Right.
She's like, well, these teeth are shot. I'm going to have to get all new teeth, so just take this one.
Plus, she was probably, at the time, she's bleeding out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, why?
You take it and you give it back later.
She was just like, he was looking at her all weird. Like, you know, you didn't pay me for giving you a ride all the way here.
Well,
gas is expensive,
he was
lady.
Asking for that. So she was in a semi-conscious state. Here's the craziest part. This woman she's the toughest woman in the world. She runs all the way to this guy's house, hops in the car, rides in it to the hospital, rips out one of her teeth, hands it over to the guy. And then when the police start questioning her, She showed no signs of going into shock, and her heart rate remained normal. That's how tough she is.
That is a tough
broad. She watched her husband die and then ripped out one of her teeth, handed it over, escaped a murderer.
Wow. Not to mention, she's got a hole through her cheeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, in her jaw and out her ear. So, toughest woman in the world.
Mm-hmm.
God bless her. So Miller County Sheriff, who became the head of the investigation, questioned Mrs. Starks in the operating room. So she's also getting operated
on. She has the operation going on.
The news was printed on the front page the next morning, reading, "Murder rocks city again, farmer slain, wife wounded." That's the headline. Catchy.
Yeah.
Great job, guys. 4 days later, Sheriff Davis talks with Mrs. Starks again at the hospital. She discounted a circulating rumor that Virgil had heard a car outside the home several nights in a row and feared being killed. So somebody else had told the cops, like, yeah, those people were being targeted. We all knew it.
And she's like, nope.
No, none of that happened. I don't know where this came from. Mm-hmm. They investigated the crime scene. They found three clues. The first was the caliber of bullets. Now, the thing is that even though they didn't match the caliber that had been used in the first two the first two murders, a 38, it ended up being a 22. They still decided to link it because it was such a similar MO. It was a couple of people at night hanging out alone, but
interesting.
So you got to take this one with a grain of salt. Yeah, at the time there was someone murdering couples at night, but this didn't match the same caliber bullet. It didn't happen in a car.
It was a different type of...
Yeah, it was just completely different. Huh. But it did maintain the MO of a stranger shooting you through the back of the head. Mm-hmm. So,
and it wasn't happening often.
No. And we don't know if he had a pillowcase over his head either, because you have to remember that Mrs. Starks didn't actually see the killer.
Right.
She
got shot.
Yeah, well, she saw her husband, ran to the phone, and then got shot herself. Crazy. So she never actually saw the guy attacking her. She just heard him running around the back of the house.
Okay.
So they found the bullets. The second was a flashlight found in a hedge underneath the window where Starks was shot. So that one does line up with the first attack where he kept the flashlight shined right into their eyes to help conceal his identity.
Right.
The last clue was bloody prints from around the house, shoe prints on the kitchen floor, and smudged fingerprints in other places. And even though they have all this forensic evidence, they can't actually match it to anybody. Sheriff Davis stated that although this murder could not be directly linked to the Phantom because of the 22, it is possible that the killer is one and the same. So, yeah,
meaning,
just giving, who knows? Like, I don't know what to tell you, man.
Yeah.
We have a killer out on the loose. People got killed.
That's where we're at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so after all this chaos, who is the Phantom Killer? Over 200 suspects over these four cases had been questioned and cleared over the course of the attacks, but nothing actually seemed to stick. So they questioned. Remember, today, Texarkana has a population of 37,000.
So they questioned everyone.
So they questioned everyone in town, practically. Max Tackett, a 33-year-old Arkansas State Police officer, a rookie at the time, realized that a car had been stolen on the night of the murders. So, on Friday, June 28th, 1946, he's like, okay, so this guy isn't just driving himself around. He's stealing cars and taking them out.
Oh.
So he's seeing a pattern of cars being stolen around the same time these murders were happening. Okay. So on June 28th, 1946, Tackett found a car in a parking lot that had been reported stolen. So he's like, ooh, I'm going to wait, see who comes out here. A 21-year-old woman named Peggy Swinney came back out to the car and was arrested. She said that she had just gotten married in Shreveport, but that her husband was currently in Atlanta, Texas, trying to sell another stolen car. So she, Tekashi 6-9's it.
Right
and
away.
And just rats everyone out.
She's like, not me, it's like, that guy right over there.
Yeah, he's the one stealing cars. You got to get to Atlanta, Texas.
Yeah.
So the chief of police in Atlanta told Max that a man had tried selling a stolen car to one of his citizens. Max asked the citizen if he would recognize the suspect, but the man said that he probably wouldn't. So he's like, do you know the guy that tried to sell you the stolen car? And he's like, I mean, honestly, there was nothing distinguishing. So
yeah,
he just looked like some dude.
Mm-hmm.
Max takes the one look at this guy, though, looks at him up and down, and is just like, well, you might not remember the guy that tried to sell you the car, but the guy who tried to sell you the car will definitely remember you. They don't say why. They just say that this guy had distinguishing features. He ugly. Like, he probably ugly, or he dressed in an eccentric way. Like, there was something that would suggest.
Big old nose, goiter.
Yeah. Something was going on with this guy where he would be immediately recognizable.
Oh, man, that sucks.
Doesn't that suck?
Oh, dude, I'm going to remember you.
Being told that.
One eye's looking east, the other's west.
Right, yeah.
So Max asks the guy, would you mind taking a walk with me? Yeah, he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So they start walking around town. And Max has this theory, like, someone will know who this guy is. And if he tried to sell him a stolen car, he's not going to want to run into him again. So I'm going to walk with this guy. And if I see anyone acting funny or trying to get away, that's my guy.
Isn't he such
a smarty?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a little rookie out there just patrolling the mean streets of Atlanta. So he takes, we're going to call him Captain Ugly. He takes Captain Ugly out on the street. And what do you know? They get to a bus station, and a guy sees Captain Ugly and bounces. Starts running immediately.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It took, like, no time. Oh, no! So he runs out the back of the building. Max chases after him and catches him on the fire escape. The man, his name is Yul Swinney, wouldn't talk. But his wife,
Swinney,
Peggy...
Yul Swinney.
His wife, Peggy, confessed in great detail that Yul was the Phantom Killer. Again.
So his wife knew
she
it?
She knew about it?
She, apparently. She said that he had killed Betty Jo Booker and Paul Martin. So she only knew about Betty Jo and Paul. She didn't know about the other ones.
Okay.
But she had to have, right?
Yeah, you
like,
have
if you
to.
Know he killed those two, then you're pretty sure
well,
that
and
he killed the others.
If you're trying to, what's the word? If you are a criminal couple, you are usually in on each other's crimes. You know what the other one is up to.
Yeah. Like,
she's the one driving stolen cars around, like, supermarkets at night and stuff. Mm-hmm. So she's not innocent in any of this.
Okay.
So she tells the police, like, everything. She's like, he did it. He absolutely did it. Here's how he did it.
Squealer.
Here's how I know. And although Peggy confessed and gave great reasons that he was the murderer, they actually, she's not able to testify against him in court legally because they're married.
Yeah.
Not allowed to testify.
There's a rule, right? That you don't have to testify against your husband.
Yeah.
She gets to choose.
Hmm. Yeah. So with nothing but circumstantial evidence, they had to drop the murder charges against him. Now, there
what?
Are also, so they did drop the murder charges. There's also some other conflicting reports that, like, some of the fingerprints that they had found at some of the crime scenes didn't match his.
Okay.
But they were in smeared blood, so how reasonable would it be to expect an exact match?
Yeah.
There's some evidence against him, but there's a lot of circumstantial evidence. There's a lot of evidence suggesting that he might not be the one, but there's a lot of circumstantial evidence suggesting that he is the one. The thing that really gets me, though, is that they did end up putting him in prison for stealing cars. He goes to prison for a long time.
Oh.
And the murders stopped.
Well, there you go.
Right, that's how
go.
I
yeah.
feel.
That just, yeah. That's
like
it.
If he's in prison and you can only attribute these four murders to someone who was out of prison at the time, then he probably did it.
Right.
However, most of us believe that Yul was the killer, but the case technically remains unsolved to this day.
What if it was his wife?
Peggy.
It was Peggy the whole
what
time.
What if it was Peggy? What if the fingerprints matched Peggy?
I'm sure they had to have tested.
You never found
that.
The pillowcase?
I don't think they found any real evidence other than the flashlight.
Yeah.
And, like, they had fingerprints and some shoe prints, but if you can't match fingerprint, you can't match fingerprint, man.
Wow.
If the glove doesn't fit,
gotta acquit.
You must acquit.
My buddy told me that.
Your buddy?
You have a buddy that's a murderer?
He played football back in the day. Long story.
O.J. Simpson did it. He's a murderer.
He absolutely did it. Infuriating.
He was found guilty in civil court. He did it.
Listen, if you want to do a podcast on that, that's fine, but this is not an OJ podcast this time.
All right, well, that's all I got for
you. Well,
Yul
did it, too.
That's all I got for you on the Texarkana Moonlight Murders.
All right, thanks for listening. We'll have a brand new episode again next week of your Saturday Morning Serial.